Hello and welcome to Luxury News Weekly. Here are the stories we're going to be talking about today. Firstly, the $3.6 billion Bitcoin seizure. That's a very interesting story. Trust me, we got the crocodile of Wall Street and her husband. We'll talk about that. Then we got a follow-up story of Sir Michael Caine's gold Rolex that we spoke about. Also, Dolce & Gabbana are launching an NFT community with UNXD. Then a fire burns a ship with over 4,000 luxury vehicles. And lastly, Britney Spears' Malibu beach house is on sale for $44.5 million. Let's get into this.
Welcome to Luxury News Weekly, your number one source for luxury news. I'm your host, Simba Wakatama.
And I'm your host, Elizabeth Solaru.
All right, our first story is the $3.6 billion seizure of Bitcoin, which had to do with the laundering of $4.5 billion in Bitcoin. This seizure is the largest in U.S. history. And of course, it's crypto related. Now, this story is so funny for so many reasons. First of all, the characters at play are like made-up supervillains, you know? We have a husband and wife duo.
Heather Rhiannon Morgan and Ilya Lichtenstein.
Yes, thank you. All right, so Morgan is really the main character in this whole saga. Morgan is a 31-year-old female rapper. Self-proclaimed, I might add, because her rap music is probably the worst I've ever heard. It's so bad that it's kind of, it's entertainment, right? But she's also a Forbes contributor, and she also is a consultant, and she would actually help people with cybercrime issues, so kind of combating cybercrimes, right? Her and her husband are both hackers, right? They're both into tech, crypto, etc. And what they're actually being charged with is not stealing the money, but laundering the money that was part of a theft in 2016. A huge Bitcoin theft. At the time, it was only about $71 million that was stolen, but now that Bitcoin is worth $4.5 billion. What do you think about this, Elizabeth?
This has all the makings of a fantastic Netflix series, actually, because the characters alone are so colorful and it's just incredible. And it just goes to show that what a bit of audacity and knowledge can get you. The thing is, they have actually not been charged with the hack itself, but with the laundering of the proceeds of the hack. And they still haven't discovered how the hack actually took place. And according to the prosecutors, they said that the illegal proceeds were actually spent on a variety of things, from gold to NFTs and to absolutely mundane things such as a Walmart gift card for $500, which, you know, it just makes you laugh, because if you've stolen billions and billions, you would think that clever people would actually keep a low profile. But unfortunately, they actually are not keeping a low profile. And they've actually used a very tangled web of cryptocurrency transactions, which the law enforcement had to be very, very meticulous in untangling, because I can just imagine moving all that money from one crypto wallet to another. But unfortunately, sometimes when you're moving money between, you know, wallet to wallet, you have no choice but to leave a trail, because a lot of the people that in charge of these wallets, you know, the people like Binance or Coinbase, etc., they know that the governments will definitely come after them. So they Absolutely. Before you even sign up for one, they want proof that you're a real person, you absolutely exist, and they want proof of your identity. So again, how they actually move the money from wallet to wallet to wallet in clever ways has actually been untangled by law enforcement, which is absolutely fantastic. So as far as I'm concerned, I think they should try and get to the hacker who actually carried out the hack. And from what people are saying, and this is just word on the street, the hacker is possibly Russian or Ukrainian. And yeah, those are my initial thoughts about this.
Yeah, and you know, they were able to track the hack, but not necessarily find the hacker themselves. So they were able to follow that digital footprint from the hack all the way to this couple, right? That's how they got them. And the money was actually used through a bunch of crimes, sexual assault rings and sexual abuse materials, a bunch of deplorable acts. And that's why this was in particular interest to the FBI, because the money was used to fund a lot of illegal activity. Now, one of the mistakes that this couple made is, even though they were using different identities, right, to move the money, like you said, they needed identities, they used the same pictures for all of the identities. They used the same pictures. So it became easier and easier the more you start to connect the dots for them to be found. So they are super geniuses that made stupid, stupid mistakes. And it just got, you know, they got caught in it. I'm just happy that this woman's rap career is over. But if anything, this kind of gives her, this kind of gives her more street cred. This kind of gives her more street, because now she can be like, you know, when I was locked up, you know, for getting my money, like.
But remember, in her one of her rap songs, she calls herself the Crocodile of Wall Street.
Yes.
In one of her rap songs. So, you know, rather than the, what was the nick with that
the
famous
Wolf of
film,
Wall Street. Yeah.
The Wolf of Wall Street. She's now the Crocodile of Wall Street. And like you said, going to prison, you know, it would earn her the stripes and she would be. The thing, though, is that all the activity, on a more serious note, though, all the activity on the dark net, you know, the monitoring on the dark net is actually very difficult. And a lot of cybersecurity experts have a hard time catching people on the dark net. So for the FBI and it was a joint effort with Monaco as well, I believe, because they have a new national cryptocurrency enforcement team. I suppose that team, which is a mix of anti-money laundering and cybersecurity experts with the FBI, etc., they painstakingly were able to trace them. And like you said, a very stupid identity, basic identity thing is what let them down. And this goes to show that no matter how many identities you have, you will still have the same face. It's still you in that passport photo, regardless of how many identities you have. So yeah, this, again, it's one of those that we will definitely be keeping a close eye on, because I want to know the outcome of this case.
Yeah, this is history making. And if they don't make a movie about this, I don't know what they're doing. You know, this is perfect. You've got the crazy wife, the chill husband, who's probably also equally weird. And I don't know. And what makes this whole worse is these are credible people. They're not, you know, they're credible. Like, she was a contributor for Forbes because she knows what she's talking about.
No, I this is where I disagree, actually. I think they're too, I wouldn't call them credible. I'll call them privileged people, because you can buy your way into being a contributor. You can network your way into being a contributor. You don't necessarily have to be an expert. Somebody else can write the articles.
But
for
they
you.
Were experts in the tech side. They just made stupid mistakes. It's like they're good. They're good at their job. They're just not good at being criminals. You know, like they got the tech. They got the tech part down. They got the laundering part down. They literally got caught because of like not technological mistakes. They got caught because of like personal just issues. You know, so yeah. You know, they would have gotten away with this, to be completely honest with you, if they didn't make a couple of very obvious blunders.
Maybe, but I don't know, though. I honestly don't know, because maybe I'm kind of looking at it from a different angle. Because if you've got the networks and you can talk your way into anything, to be honest with you. So and the people we think are experts might not be as expert as we think. But yes, absolutely, I agree with you when it comes to things like hacking, cybersecurity, etc. They obviously appear to know what they're talking about. But if they were such experts, why did they make such stupid mistakes? Such basic mistakes.
Well, same reason she thinks she can rap. Delusion.
Exactly. Delusion. Exactly. Delusions of grandeur.
Yeah, honestly, listen to a clip of that song. Maybe you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to put like a 5-second clip of the song in this podcast. It's fair use. It's
Please
fair use.
Do.
So we're
going to,
you know, we'll be right back after this break.
So that means that Nicki Minaj or Cardi B have nothing to worry
yeah,
about.
Nothing at all. Nothing at all. Oh, man.
We are interrupting this episode to tell you a little bit about the people behind Luxury News Weekly. I'm your host, Simbo Wakatama, the founder and CEO of Volo Bespoke. We personalize jewelry storage for the jewelry you wear. Find me on Instagram or LinkedIn at Simba Wakatama.
I'm Elizabeth Solaru, founder and CEO of Luxury Business Emporium and Elizabeth's Cake Emporium. You can find me on LinkedIn as Elizabeth Solaru or on Instagram as Luxury Business Emporium.
Okay, now here's a follow-up story. So earlier in the season, we spoke about the Sir Michael Caine's auction, right, of his personal goods because he's downsizing his home. He kind of wants to get rid of some things. And one thing of particular interest was this gold Rolex that we were saying, okay, let's keep our eye on that. Now, the Rolex itself is nothing particularly special, right? It's just a, you know, as far as the Rolexes go, it's just a normal one, right? 18 karat yellow gold, kind of a classic Rolex. Of course, Rolexes now, during the pandemic, have been selling for skyrocket prices because of their rarity. But this was still only expected to fetch somewhere between 10,000 to $16,000. So in pounds, that's like 8,000 to 12,000 pounds. But a record was broken and we called it. We called it.
Yep, absolutely.
All right. We said it first. This thing is going to sell for way more than they thought. And for sure, they broke the world record for this model and it sold for £125,250, which is about $167. Okay, there you go, folks. We know it. We said it. It happened.
Absolutely. I mean, the provenance of the watch alone was definitely worth, I mean, as soon as we saw the pre-sale estimate, we knew it was way, way, way low. It was on the low side. And the provenance, the star power of Sir Michael Caine, and the fact that he was actually photographed wearing the watch, that in itself, again, made it a collectible. And I keep saying this, I think they also, we, and I think we probably said it at the time, they probably missed a trick because there were other things they could have done around the watch. And they could have, I believe it could have gone for a cool £250,000 if on, you know, specialist luxury news channels, it wasn't really in the mainstream at all. They didn't kind of play up his Batman Begins kind of. So there was a lot that wasn't done, that could have been done, that really would have bumped up the price of this watch. So not surprised at all, but I'm really, really glad that it broke records.
And you know, the funny thing about this watch, it's a quartz movement. So right now, you know, no one in their right mind would buy a quartz Rolex. But because, again, the provenance, the time, the piece of history that it had, this quartz Rolex sold for over $100,000, which is just, it's crazy. It's madness, but we know exactly why. And this is a collector's dream, right? Of course, everything from the auction sold, everything, all 183 pieces. I think, like you said, if the auctioneers themselves took it a little more seriously, then it would have been worth even more. And I think that just comes down to why the Christie's of the world and the Sotheby's of the world are the top of their class, because they are a hype machine. They get people drooling before the release, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, like you said, those two top auction houses, they demonstrate day in, day out why they are at the very top. And they are very quick to spot an opportunity. And I remember that one of my interests in NFTs was because they were involved. And I'm kind of thinking, if they're taking it seriously and they're doing all this work around NFTs, maybe there is something in it. So again, at the time, we called it, honestly.
Yeah, yeah.
They should be paying us.
We were like, this is obvious. What are you doing?
Yeah. Yeah. And for them to be so conservative in their estimate, it just goes to show, you know, you kind of wonder, you know, are they really going to push the sale as much as they possibly can, et cetera, et cetera. But I'm still glad that Sir Michael Caine's name was able to lure in the appropriate collectors for all the pieces. And I'm glad they sold out.
Yeah, I think they underestimated Sir Michael Caine's influence in the modern day. Like, they probably know him for his earlier works and just thought, well, we've got a legacy actor. How well will this really keep its value? Even, say, not just from the person who buys it at this auction, but the person who they buy it at this auction, then they sell it, right? If you know you can at least sell it for more, maybe down the line, further down the line, you're more willing to pay a pretty penny at, you know, regardless of the cost. But I think they underestimated that this guy is the man, to old, to young, to everything, and to everyone in between, you know? So, yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. And as we said at the time, he's a national treasure. He, again, established some of the very well-known, very iconic British movies. He was on the scene in the 60s, 70s, etc. And he's remained relevant. He's absolutely remained relevant. And I love that you've referenced the people who want to collect for resale purposes, and they'll buy and hang on to it and then sell at the right time. So those are some of the things they really should have thought about. But anyway, I'm just so happy that Sir Michael Caine is now able to downsize and he now has a chunk of change in his pocket.
Oh, yeah. He's got a nice little chunk of change there to live well into his retirement. Not that he needed it, but you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, speaking of NFTs and auctions, Dolce and Gabbana, they've announced that they're going to release an NFT community with UNXD. What I like about this and what I like about Dolce and Gabbana when it comes to the NFT world is, again, they're committing to not just digital, but physical experiences as well. And they've actually tacked on MoonPay into this collaboration. And what MoonPay allows you to do is then be able to buy these NFTs just using your credit card, right? So this is kind of great for someone who doesn't necessarily want to set up a whole crypto wallet and keep track of this and that. Just makes it easy. So yeah, I think this is great. What do you think, Elizabeth?
I think this is probably one of the best NFT drops right now. And they have managed to generate such excitement. I actually was in a room with the with UNXD and you know, representatives on another NFT. I think Jacob and Co. We spoke about that in one of our previous podcasts. And for this one, what they've decided to do is they created a hashtag called hashtag DG family. So we're talking about that initial family community feel, because an NFT is only as good as the community willing to buy it. So obviously with Dolce & Gabbana, they've got the brand, but they're now trying to create this NFT family community, especially for people who might not necessarily want to buy Dolce stuff for the fashion, but they just want to collect the NFT. So I thought that was a very good and smart move. They've emphasized the experiential, digital and physical part of the NFT. Again, tick, tick, tick. And what they've also done is to create a whitelist. So they've made people apply to be able to buy these NFT collection. And this NFT collection is not available online and is not available in any of their stores. So you can only buy it through UNXD. And I'm going to come back to that point later, because something has actually cropped up, which actually has put a bit of a dampener. But let's go to the NFT itself. So what they've done is create three boxes. So you've got a black box, a gold box, and I believe a platinum box. And so with a black box, you get certain benefits. With a gold box, you get all the benefits of the black box and more. And then the platinum, you get all the benefits of the gold and black box and even more. And they've also created some of the boxes, you have mystery prizes as well. So you might find yourself front row of a fashion show, or you might find yourself being flown out somewhere. I don't know. But anyway, they've created these mystery prizes as well. So, and each box, I've seen the videos for the boxes. I mean, the videos for the boxes are absolutely beautiful. The same specialist Italian craftsmanship that go for the physical boxes is what you find digitally. It's absolutely beautiful. I was pretty, pretty impressed. Now, back to the point I made earlier about the fact that you can only buy through UNXD. What's actually happened is that there are fake NFT creators out there trying to use the Dolce & Gabbana brand. So trying to tell people, oh, this is part of the DG family NFT creation thing. Come and buy from us. It's an exclusive, blah, blah, blah. So Dolce & Gabbana and UNXD have had to issue warnings that they are not selling on any other platform except through UNXD. Because on OpenSea, and this is one of the disadvantages of an unregulated platform, people can go and create anything. You can literally open your account and then start selling anything in anyone's name because it's largely unregulated. So it's, so people need to know you can only buy this this NFT through UNXD, and you have to be whitelisted. The only people not whitelisted are people who bought the previous collection of NFTs, which dropped last September. So everyone's absolutely excited about this. Everyone's absolutely thrilled. And we loved the previous collection, which was the Collezione Genesi. We loved that. I think this one is even going to be better, and I hope it is. So yeah, that's roughly what I know for now.
No, that's great. And, you know, the in real life experience side as well is what's kind of cool. You are essentially buying a membership, right? With benefits in terms of the digital art, the swag, and then the opportunity for the physical events. And I think really that's what NFTs are becoming more so, is clubs, private clubs. It's the Soho House kind of model, regulated by the ownership of the membership. But the difference is, why I think it's even bigger than that kind of Soho House model, is no one knows you're a Soho House member until you start posting it and they don't allow you to post. In this case, everyone knows what you're about because you post your NFTs everywhere. You make it your profile picture, you make it this, you make it that. So it's an exclusive group. It's an exclusive group that is publicly visible. And with Dolce & Gabbana, it's also an exclusive group with a luxury brand, right? And then, of course, it's publicly available. So, yeah, I think it's great.
And I love their model of trying to limit or trying to create a whitelist. So only certain people, in effect, are allowed in. And I'm assuming, again, that they've made only a limited number of boxes for people to collect. And again, I think that's genius because people always want to get into the club. That's the hardest to get into. So again, they're building the community. They're sending the word out. Like somebody said, luxury brands advertise to people that can't afford it. But actually the people that buy, you know, and they allow people that can afford it to buy from them. So again, I'm loving the marketing around this. I'm liking the strategy around this.
Absolutely. Now let's talk about a real tragedy here. We're talking about a ship that was carrying thousands of luxury vehicles, and it went up in flames. So there was a cargo ship that was carrying a kind of a stock of Volkswagen Group's cars. So this is anything from Volkswagens to Porsches to Audis to Bentleys and even Lamborghinis. And this thing went up in flames. And to make matters worse, they had electric vehicles on there. And electric vehicles usually have a lithium-ion battery. And if you know anything about lithium-ion batteries, they explode very easily, especially if they're in the presence of heat. Like we had at one point, the Samsung phones that would just explode in your pocket. And actually, I had a friend that literally had that phone and it exploded in his pocket.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it burnt his jeans and he kind of burnt through his underwear. But luckily, he
Ouch.
Took his pants off. This was in the office. Yeah, but luckily,
oh my God.
It was late at night, so no one was there. Like, we were there.
My God.
We were there, but, like, no one was there. And he had to, like, take his pants off and sit in the sink and start running water. Yeah.
Wow.
I know it's funny because he didn't get hurt, but if he got hurt, that would have been tragic.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So now.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. But in this case, now you've got people stuck on a ship with giant lithium ion batteries everywhere. And this fire is blazing. You can't even stop this kind of chemical fire with regular equipment. They needed specialized equipment. So the fire just went on and on until it consumed every car and there was nothing left for the fire to consume. Then it died. We're talking about $222 million worth of cars. And at the same time, I'm sorry. The cargo is worth about close to $400 million, actually. Close to $400 million, excluding the actual cargo ship.
Whoa.
Right? So, yeah, what do you think about this?
Well, from what the reports are saying, there were 3,965 vehicles on the ship, 1,100 Porsches and 189 Bentleys were on board. So, because recently they've tried to estimate the amount of damage, et cetera, because they said 3/4 of everything gone, which is about 282 million, like you said. And in terms of damage, it's not just the fire damage, because you've got water damage, you've got smoke damage, and then you've got submersion damage as well. The most important thing is that all the crew, they got off safely, which is great. At least there was no loss of life. But imagine in the middle of the ocean, having to put out that fire, nightmare. And another thing they need to be worried about is pollution. Because if they've got these lithium batteries, they've got fire, they've got fuel. And remember that the fire was very close to the fuel tank of the ship itself. So that could have been another entirely different story in terms of pollution, in terms of loss, et cetera, et cetera. So right now, the estimate in terms of that 282 million, it doesn't include any salvage. It doesn't include any environmental damage, cost of the ship itself, the lost wages of the crew, or the cost to the Portuguese that rescued them. Because obviously the Portuguese government, so Volkswagen right now and the insurers are probably looking at maybe twice that estimated 282 million in terms of overall damage. Obviously, there's been no comment from Lamborghini US. Again, I think right now they're still trying to assess everything. But then again, it goes to, if we start looking at things like maritime law, insurance, legalities, who's responsible, is it the responsibility of the countries that these cargoes pass through? Because we don't think about these things. We just go out and get a car. We don't think about how these cars are brought to our shores. So this probably will open up some sort of conversation or debate in the future.
Yeah, and also, it's hard to tell whether the batteries themselves started the fire or it was a fire that was just kind of fed by the gas and the batteries in the cars on board. And another thing is, like you said, we've got Lamborghinis, we've got this, we've got that. In the case of these luxury cars, there are a lot of custom parts, a lot of custom cars. So a customer is waiting for that, and they've been waiting for a long time. And now it's up in flames. What happens, right? And margins on these cars are thin, paper thin. So this is huge. We're talking about $250 million here, right? This is not a little event. I suspect that the group will share the damages and that sort of thing, but there's people on the other side waiting, even the dealers waiting to sell that car.
Yeah.
And make money off of that car. So what happens when they don't have their supply? Like, this is such the trickle-down effects. Honestly, from an environmental standpoint, I wouldn't hold them to task about that. It's not like they set the fire on purpose, is it? And
we don't know, actually, because that's the thing. This is where investigators come in, because we don't know how the fire was actually started. So this is where investigators, and like you said, there's even a massive liability, because if the fire started from one of the batteries, for example, or faulty electricals or anything like that, we're talking liability, we're talking health and safety.
Yeah. And this is Volkswagen, so if the fire was due to a defect in a car, something like that, they'll get away with it. They always do.
Don't be so cynical.
No, I mean, they can't really be charged for it. They can only be fined. They're protected by their government, so that's that. But I'm hoping that it's just something that's like a one-off, because otherwise people are not going to get their cars. If we know that these things can just randomly explode when they're not even been driven, then that's a problem. All right, our last story for today is Britney Spears and her Malibu beach house. Now, it's selling for $44.5 million, and this is the house that was in the music video for the Sometimes video. Now, what do you think about this estate and the sale, Elizabeth?
Well, I think it's interesting. Obviously, the fact that it belongs to Britney is a huge attraction for a number of people. Whether majority of her fans could actually afford this is a different matter. It has a place in history, I believe, because it's been immortalized in a video. And also, Britney has been in the news recently because she's been trying to get emancipated from her father. So, and obviously a lot has been coming out around that. It's taken several years, but her fans have campaigned and campaigned and campaigned. And it looks like she's had a win. So this is of interest to, you know, this estate is of interest to a number of people. However, you need to think of the kind of person or family that would be able to afford this estate. Again, from the description of it, they said it was last sold in May 1986, and this current listing actually marks the first time the place has been on the market in 35 years. So owning a piece of pop history obviously doesn't come cheap. They said at the end of the 300-foot gated driveway that there is a whopping 1.9-acre lot that has 131 feet of ocean frontage. So yeah, if it overlooks the ocean, obviously, you know, that is going to be a huge plus. So I am curious as to who's going to buy this. And yeah, I just think it looks beautiful. And whoever sells it, again, they would be assured of their place in history.
Absolutely. Now, if you look at this this beach house and you're not familiar with Malibu prices, you are thinking of a mansion. This is a house, a beach house. It's not a mansion, not even close. In fact, it's about the main house is 4,210 square feet. So for $44 million, well, $44.5 million, the square footage pricing is just, it's just dumb. It's like, it's, you know what I mean? It wouldn't make sense anywhere else in the world, probably. Maybe London. That's about it, right?
I was about to say that, remember, in London, our houses don't come big at all. In London, you know, space is a premium. So again, but the $44 million is it's a bit steep.
But I guess it's because if you want beachfront property in Malibu and prime beachfront property, not only is it going to cost you, but you won't actually have the opportunity to buy.
Yeah. Because this one has only come on the market the first time in 35 years. And that is significant. So that means people buy and kind of hold. They don't buy to sell. So yeah.
I don't know. You know, It is steep. It is so steep. I get it, though. I understand. I'm just saying. Even as far as expensive real estate goes, this is up there.
Yeah. I mean, let's see if it sells, because if it doesn't, they could potentially maybe rent it out by the hour to Instagram influencers.
Right. And they'll make their money in a million years.
No, but you never know. If they rent it out, because, people are crazy. People might want to pay $100,000 just so they can say, I took a photo in Britney's house. You never know. People are crazy and they will do anything for clout. So you never know.
Most expensive Airbnb.
Exactly.
It could be, spend a night in Britney's, it could be an experience.
Exactly. I mean, if you think about it, they might think, we can make this work.
It might work. It might work.
Yeah.
I don't hate it.
Yeah.
I don't hate it at all.
Because you never know. You honestly never know with people. People are crazy enough. But I let's see if it sells. If it doesn't, you might see people, trooping over to Malibu so they can take those photos.
Yeah. Well, and the thing is right now, too, there's a lot of crackdowns on billionaires now.
Yeah.
Just globally. And so they are spending like crazy trying to hide their money. So they'll be like, oh, overpriced house? Perfect. This thing could get sold today as we speak,
Exactly.
Well, that has been it from us today for Luxury News Weekly. I hope you enjoyed the weekly stories. Also, don't forget to leave a great review because you love this show. And also check us out on Instagram and TikTok, where we'll keep you updated with the latest in luxury news. Have a great day.